Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Kidney Compass, live from Houston, Texas, where we're today joined by Professor Danny Gale. Many of you will know Danny from one of our previous episodes where we talked about the Parasol Initiative. But for those who haven't yet met him, he's the St. Peter's Chair of Nephrology at University College London and the Director of the RADAR Registry in the UK. And it's our pleasure to have him on the show today. Welcome, Danny.
I'm very pleased to be here. Thank you.
Well, you've had a busy couple of days here in Houston. You've presented a late-breaking trial today in Alport syndrome. You've presented some data from the RADAR registry revealing new insights into IgA nephropathy and recurrence of glomerular diseases post-transplantation. Why don't we start with your trial in Alport syndrome and telling us a little bit about the investigational therapy and the trial itself?
Sure. So this is a study of the enzymatic NOX1/4 inhibitor setanaxib in patients with Alport syndrome. So NOX1 and NOX4 are enzymes that produce reactive oxygen species. They're expressed by podocytes, and it's thought that the production of ROS leads to inflammation and increased extracellular matrix production by the podocytes, which damages the kidney in Alport syndrome. And the idea of setanaxib is to block that process by reducing ROS production and therefore reducing ECM production and inflammatory change in the hope of ameliorating the disease. The clinical trial was a phase 2A double-blind randomized control trial. It was a small study for patients with Alport syndrome, proteinuria, EGFR above 30, and 20 patients were recruited, randomized 2-to-1 to setanaxib or placebo. They all got RAS blockade and other conservative therapies as appropriate. At the end of 24 weeks, which was the primary analysis time, there was a reduction in proteinuria seen in the treatment group compared with the placebo group. The study was very small. The variability was such that that difference was not statistically significant. We did also see among the setanaxib group that two of the patients, males with X-linked Alport syndrome, there was a more than 25% reduction in proteinuria, which is something that we didn't see in any of the placebo cohort. And we also saw that five of the patients in the treatment group, compared to only one in the placebo group, had a reduction below 10% or in proteinuria. EGFR was not statistically significantly different between the groups and was reduced in both at the end of the study compared with at the beginning.
Fantastic. So promising results, but a small study, but preliminary signs of potential efficacy.
That's right. In a study of this size, it's not really possible to make definitive statements about treatment efficacy and safety, but rather this provides evidence that the theory and the very encouraging mouse data is potentially borne out in humans, and I would hope will justify further larger studies that would tease apart and quantify just what the impact on proteinuria and hopefully in the long-term kidney function in Alport syndrome this drug might have.
So, Danny, just taking a step back from setanaxib and looking at the broader evidentiary landscape in Alport syndrome, this is an area of huge unmet need and not a lot of trials, but there have been a couple of previous trials in Alport syndrome, haven't there?
Yes, there have been. They've been a long time coming, so it's only really in the last 3 or 4 years that there have been any trials published at all. And there have, as far as I know, been two randomized control trials. And in neither of those studies was there a clear evidence of reduction in proteinuria coupled with preservation of kidney function. So although there have been some encouraging results, I think to my knowledge, this is the most encouraging of what we've got. As you say, there's a lot of unmet need. Alport syndrome, particularly for males with X-linked disease and autosomal recessive Alport syndrome, is very high unmet need. And most of those patients still, unfortunately, will be destined towards kidney failure at some point in their life, some as children.
Right. And so moving forward, perhaps not even with this drug, but in general in how we generate evidence for new therapies in Alport syndrome, what do you think the right trial design might be for a later phase study?
It really depends on the mechanism of action of the drug. But where we are at the moment in Alport syndrome is we don't really have an established surrogate endpoint that could be used to get marketing authorization for a new therapy. And that's work that hopefully will be done over the next year or so to try and understand what the relationship between proteinuria and EGFR change early in the disease and what that relationship is with kidney failure risk. And hopefully that will give us an idea of exactly how much of a treatment effect we're going to need to see in a trial of an agent such as this or other agents to give enough assurance that new therapy is actually going to impact on patients.
Well, that brings us very nicely to the other work that you do that many of our listeners and viewers will know about, which is your work leading the RADAR registry. That work has been incredible in transforming our understanding of the natural history of many glomerular diseases, and through your work in PARASOL has also informed how we study new therapies in some of these rare diseases. You've also presented some new data from registry at the meeting this week. What can you tell us a little bit about those two reports?
So the first one is a poster presented by Sherry Massoud, who's one of our clinical fellows and working on the RADAR data. And she really did two things in IgA nephropathy. She looked at about 500 biopsies, and she showed that C3 staining at the time of biopsy, independent of EGFR and proteinuria at that time, is a strong predictor both of EGFR loss and also kidney failure hazard over time. She also used biopsies for which there wasn't a MES-C score reported, but was able to abstract what the MES-C would have been. And she trained a large language model to do the same thing. And she found that the performance of the large language model was essentially indistinguishable from a very well-trained human. So Ian Roberts was the histopathologist who helped her with that study. And that's important because she looked at 500 biopsies, but actually we now know there's over 10,000 biopsies in RADAR, and the approaches that we're going to need to really study those biopsies are going to need automated methods to get some certainty about what those things show.
That's incredible because we've talked about this in the past, that there is substantial variability in how different histopathologists classify IgA nephropathy based on the MES-C score. So if a large language model can do that to the extent that Ian Roberts can do that, or an expert pathologist, that is a tremendously increases the scale at which you can look at some of that data, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, the nice thing about RADAR is that we've got outcome data for so many patients that we can use the center or even the histopathologist as a covariate in the model to try and use what's been documented at the time of biopsy to predict outcomes.
And the C3 data too, that's really interesting. It highlights or suggests the role of complement, right, in disease progression in IgA nephropathy specifically?
Yeah, I mean, it confirms data from some East Asian series that have shown, I'd say, qualitatively the same thing. It was able to quantify some of those relationships in a way that hadn't been done, certainly in Europe, predominantly European ancestry populations. And yes, the fact is independent of proteinuria and EGFR presentation does tell us that it's giving us additional information over and above that. It also strongly associates with the MES-C score itself. So perhaps it could be a justification for complement inhibitory therapy in at least some patients with IgA nephropathy.
Fantastic. And then moving along to your post-transplant data from registry, tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, so in RADAR, we've got data from lots of patients who've had a kidney transplant, and we looked at several thousand patients with different glomerular diseases and ADPKD, and looked at graft survival. And we saw, as we'd expected, really, that people with glomerulopathies that can recur have a much poorer graft survival compared to patients transplanted for ADPKD. We were also able to look at the age at first graft failure. And this was an attempt to really quantify what the lifetime need for kidney transplantation is going to be among people, particularly with nephrotic syndrome, Alport syndrome, and C3G, who get their disease early, who get kidney failure early, and then lose their graft early. And there's a very high burden early in life life of needing a second graft. And of course, the implication is that they might also need a third or even subsequent grafts, which obviously illustrates what the unmet need is in those groups. We also saw a very strong relationship between proteinuria at 1 year and graft survival. And that was both in the ADPKD cohort and the glomerular disease cohort, with people who had more than half a gram of proteinuria at 1 year post-transplant had a more than fourfold increased risk of graft loss over follow-up. And this is almost certainly a combination of allograft nephropathy and recurrent disease.
And in your data, were you able to look at the risk of disease recurrence with different forms of glomerular diseases?
Yeah, so we stratified by glomerular disease and we saw quite different patterns with early disease recurrence in nephrotic syndrome, slightly later disease recurrence and probably greater overall likelihood in C3 glomerulopathy and later graft loss in IgA nephropathy. At the moment, we haven't studied the histopathology reports to really confirm that it is recurrent disease and not other processes that's causing that increased burden. And of course, those are going to be important questions that we're going to need to answer in the future.
And hopefully things you can do with large language models and other techniques that you can scale the evaluation of biopsies in RENA.
That is the hope, yeah.
Yeah, fantastic. Well, thank you very much for joining us today. It's always great to have you and great to see you again in Houston. For everyone listening and viewing online, make sure you see the rest of our conference coverage and check it out on the HCP website. So, Danny, thanks very much for joining us again.
Great to see you.
Okay.